Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Casey Grant, and this is part three of my shows that are introducing and getting comments from some of the people that were on this fabulous documentary by PBS, co-produced by Sarah Colt and Helen Dworsky, and we are interviewing some of the people that were on the panel, just to get their feedback and their comments as to how they reacted to it, how they felt about it, and did they think it was good coverage or good representation of our lives. I'm waiting now for Andra Mays to call in. She's having a little difficulty, but she was among the first African-American hired by National and Pan Am. So I'm going to bring her in so she can give you her comments and also her remarks and tell us a little bit about the trials and tribulations that she faced during those years of being the first. So with that, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Andra Mays. She will give you all the information, highlights, and I hear that there's some. So, hello, Andra, can you hear me? Okay, I see that you're on. And she is going to call us back, ladies and gentlemen. If you could hear, we had some noise in the background, and so I think she's going to try to call us again and find out exactly what's happening here. But she has an interesting story for all of us. And some of the things that she told me that she had to deal with, the racism, we all have our story. And hers is really a difficult one to listen to. But she is at this point going to tell us how it felt and the things that she went through. So once again, I'm going to try. Hello, Andra, are you on?
Yes, finally.
Finally.
I'm
I know
so
I heard
sorry.
That whistling. Oh, no, you are absolutely fine. Don't worry. So I was just telling the audience about a little bit about your life. And so if you would, please tell us your story and tell us who you are, where you're from. And you were the very first for National and Pan Am. Is that correct? So just give us a little introduction, if you would, please.
Well, my name, of course, is Andra Mays, and I was not the first with National Airlines nor Pan Am.
Okay.
Pan Am had a mixture of individuals, but with National, there were two others there prior to, you know, to me completing the classes, and there was two in my class, but they did not stay. One left before the probationary period was up, and the other one left shortly after.
Okay.
Which that then just left me, you know, as the person of color there. But it was a trying time.
And what year was that? What year are we talking about now? The first
1970.
Okay, in 1970. And that was National?
That was National.
Are we speaking? Okay.
Yes. That was National, National Airlines. And National and Pan Am merged. And that's how I became Pan Am, you know, flight attendant.
Okay. I forgot we've gotten so many airlines that we've had, and they merged, and they dissolved, and so I have forgotten that transition from National to Pan Am. Okay, that was good for me to remember.
Yes. And like I say, it was different. The crews as well as the supervisors were not very pleasant. You know, they didn't welcome me in. And pilots refused to have me as part of their crew. So whenever I saw certain faces or names, I mean, some of them I remembered. Whenever I saw their names, I wouldn't bother to get on the plane. I would just stand in the jetway and wait for the agent to come down to ask for me and say that scheduling was on the phone. And I knew that they were going to change my flight, you know. But it was trying, you know, at times, because I really had no one to depend on. I couldn't go to the office. I mean, obviously, you know, the office supervisors did not want me there. And, and I was in leadership because out of training I was in leadership. And, and half of the time the crews wouldn't show up for briefing. So I would just go to the airport, and once I walk on the plane, they would make monkey calls on the PA.
Now, this is with National. Is it? Now, are we talking the time period? This is with National, and this is in the 70s. And for the audience, leadership would mean the supervisor or the person in charge. Is that correct? That's your terminology for National?
That is correct. Yes.
And this is in 1970. And when you would get on the airplane, they would make monkey calls. No passengers were on at that time.
Right. No passengers are on. I would go to the briefing, you know, the briefing room that was, you know, set up for the that particular flight number. And I would wait, you know, after two or three times of doing that, I was aware that they were not going to come to the briefing, so I needed to just get over, you know, go to the airport. And when I would walk on the plane, they would all be in the back, but they would make monkey calls on the PA.
Oh, boy.
You know, and I would just simply walk to the back and give them what information that, you know, according to the flight, you know, wheelchairs unaccompanied, the weather and that kind of thing. And I would turn around and go back, you know. And they would pretty much stay in the back, you know. They never helped me, you know, with any ground service or anything like that, or boarding. They just kind of stayed in the back, away from me.
Now, for the audience, let me just kind of clear, because we're talking airline terminology here, so I'm sure that your story is just so depressing, first of all. But the person that is in charge, the flight attendant that is in charge, is supposed to deliver all the vital information to the rest of the crew member. So when Andrea is saying that she was waiting for a briefing or in the briefing room, all flight attendants at that point, they were still called stewardesses, you go to this particular location to hear all the vital information about the passengers or anything that the captain may want to make sure that the other flight attendants, stewardesses know. And that's what you do. You go to the briefing room and you listen to your leader. And as Andrea has just told the story, they totally started to disrespect, her disrespect started when they did not show up to honor or respect her position. And now, as she has just said to us, the embarrassing situation and degrading situation of her getting on the airplane and they making monkey calls to her, which was just unheard of, disrespectful, and just demoralizing. And so this is a clarification of what she has just told us. And so, Andra, how did you ever report any of this stuff to the company?
Who's that going to report it to?
Good answer.
I mean, yes.
Good answer. Yes.
The first time I did go in and discussed it with my supervisor. And I mean, I can't remember exactly what was said, but in essence, it was like, and what's the problem?
Exactly.
You know? And so then I just, you know, I mean, with that, I changed my persona. You know, I made a point of the flight attendant that was sitting next to me that had to sit on the jump seat next to me, you know, I would talk to them, although they did not want to talk to me. And, you know, I would make a couple of comments or whatever. And then I would just touch them lightly, you know, on the arm or something, you know. But it was because I was aware that they didn't want to sit, you know, even on the jump seat next to me.
Yeah.
And as soon as the, you know, it cleared, you know, with the, and then there was the no smoking sign. As soon as the no smoking sign went off, they would shoot to the back. They did not help me at all with any of the service. You know, and it was like, okay, you know, fine. You know, I set it up and you know, did it my way.
I understand. Now, where are you from?
I'm actually from Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay. And had you faced racism to any degree before you started flying? And what inspired you to become a stewardess?
Yes. As you know, Jacksonville is very racist, you know. I did experience some, racism in Jacksonville. But I wanted to travel, and I wanted to, I'm a people person, you know, so being a flight attendant, which I was very young when I wanted to be a flight attendant, because I remember in elementary school or whatever that they would ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I wrote in my little paper, stewardess. And I remember the, the teacher, chastising me because I spelled stewardess wrong. And I was maybe second grade or something.
Oh.
And that stayed with me, because then I knew that I really wanted to be a stewardess.
Exactly. To travel, to see the world, to meet new people. That was your dream, and you pursued it.
Yes.
Oh, my. But not knowing, but little did you know all that you would have to or would be confronted with. Now, with that part of life, because people were fighting, women were fighting for their equal rights back then, blacks were fighting for equal rights, the whole world was in turmoil back then. What gave you the drive to continue?
Actually, it was for my own selfish reasons that I refused to give up simply because other individuals wanted me to. So I, you know, the more that they attacked me, the harder I fought. So it was, you know, it was pretty much for the selfish reasons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to allow anyone to push me out, you know, once I made it through, you know, training.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't going to happen. I mean, if I'd gotten fired, okay, you know, then, you know, fine. But not because you didn't like me.
Mm-hmm. Or the color,
you know,
of your,
I mean,
skin.
It's like, mm-hmm. Right. It's like, how could you not like me? You know, I'm personable, you know, and we're all Americans. So how could you not like me?
And speaking of that, not even liking you, what about back in the day, ladies and gentlemen, flight stewardesses were sharing rooms. And so not only was she being faced with the situation where no one wanted to sit with her or touch her on the jump seat, now I want you to tell the story of how they treated you when it came to your rooms or getting a room in the hotels. Would you mind sharing that story with the audience?
No. They would, you know, decide among themselves, you know, once we arrive at the hotel, that one person would jump out of the bus and the other two would, you know, of course, you know, bring her things inside, her luggage, and she would sign up, you know, for the two rooms, you know, sign the other two to one room and sign herself into the second room. But by the time I would go to the desk to sign in, they're already gone. And I would receive my key and I would go up to the room, but the door would be locked. And back then you had the lock on the door, and then you had the little bolt lock that you would, you know, pull across. And you know, and they wouldn't open the door. I would go back to the desk and, you know, and explain to them that, you know, that I needed to get into the room. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, someone from the desk would go back to the room with me. Sometimes it was the manager, and they would refuse to open the door. And, you know, and oftentimes the hotels would give me another room, but sometimes, you know, especially when it was busy, you know, during the holidays or whatever, the hotel would be full. So, you know, I would have pretty much nowhere to sleep. And I would find a corner, you know, you couldn't do that now, but I would find a corner, you know, tucked away somewhere, and I'm in uniform, and I would just, you know, kind of nod off and on, because, of course, I'm not going to stretch out. But, yeah, and I would sleep in the lobby, you know, and the, you know, I would try to make a little, you know, friends with housekeeping, that they called them maids then, but housekeeping, you know, where they would make certain I was up by a certain time. And I would go into, they would take me into their little area where I could, you know, wash up, brush my teeth and that kind of stuff. And when the crew would come down, I would be just sitting in the lobby ready to go.
And no one, or especially the person that you were sharing the room with, they would never inquire what happened to you. They showed no concern that you definitely had not come to that room, but they never worried that you had or what had happened to you during the night. Is that right?
Oh, no, no. And I never mention it. I mean, I would, you know, of course, greet them, you know, good morning or whatever. And I never once mentioned that. And the first, the very first time that that someone shared a room with me, when I went into the bathroom, because, you know, we had our little toiletry bags, you know, on the counter. And when I went into the bathroom, all of my makeup and toiletry was in the toilet. I just got it out of the toilet and wrapped it in like a you know, a face towel. And I stayed in the bathroom. I mean, I did my little shower and stuff and walked out and never said a word. Never.
And they never said a word to you?
No.
Didn't even acknowledge or even appear to be ashamed of what they had done?
No.
No. Your story is just, that takes my breath away. I started flying in 71, so that was a year later. And my stories, I thought, were very uncomfortable, but yours are just unacceptable. Unacceptable. Would throw your makeup in the toilet, have no remorse, say nothing, not even make eye contact with you knowing what they had done.
Oh, they would make eye contact, you know, and I assumed that they were waiting for me to comment, you know, or ask why. But I just came out of the bathroom and you know, and what minor little comments or conversation that they, you know, indulge me in. I just did that. But no.
Never.
No, I never said never said a word.
Yes. And how long did you fly for National before they merged with Pan Am?
We merged with Pan Am, I want to say, in 90 or 91.
And did conditions get better? How long were you subjected to things like that? Or when did you recognize it was changing, their attitude?
Well, a lot of the change came about after the Fly Me ad.
And please explain that to my audience, because this was National's campaign. So please explain that to the audience.
Yes, National campaign, one of their campaigns was Fly Me. And what they did was they had names, female names, on certain airplanes, and the ad was Fly Me. You know, so with that ad, I did go out, for the interview and everything for that ad. And we had to interview in uniform, and they took pictures, and I was assuming that they, you know, the pictures were taken to see if you were photogenic or whatever, and I just thought I would entertain all of my options so, you know, people would know that I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually selected me, but I was never informed about, that I had been selected or, you know, one of the flight attendants that was selected. And it wasn't until someone saw me with a full-page ad in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me. And I thought, no, I mean, you know, they would have told me. No, they never told me. But I had a full-page ad in several newspapers, but that particular flight attendant, you know, had seen it in the New York Times. You know, and that's how I was even aware that I had been chosen for the ad, you know. And with that, things changed a little bit for the better, because then they were willing to talk to me. Passengers were extremely rude to me, and then they were excited when I was on a DC-10 or a 747 that had my name on it, you know, because we all had name tags. But, so things, started to take a little slight change, turn then.
So actually you became a celebrity for the airlines, and at that point, for the audience, just a little more insight on that Fly Me slogan or campaign that they did back then. They would highlight different personalities and different, and at that point it was more all white and just Andra, but the white stewardess would come and they would go, "Hi, I'm Cindy, fly me. Hi, I'm Mary, fly me." And so that was the sexist commercial back then to draw the passengers in. So with Andra being a person of color, that really was saying a lot. It was opening up the statement that we have a person of color working for our airline. And as she has just said, everyone started to treat her a little better. At that point, you became a celebrity and you didn't even know it. I think that you, and I would like your opinion, but at that point, it was a personal accomplishment, not realizing how the statement that you were making for the equality of women, and black women in particular, that they chose you to represent the airline and for you to represent people of color. Did you realize what you were doing, or was it just more of a personal satisfaction that I did it, they chose me? Can you remember how you felt?
Yes. I mean, it was more personal for me. I wasn't thrilled with the ad itself, but it was just the fact that I wanted to try out for the ad so that, you know, they would refuse me. You know,
mm-hmm.
my way of thinking that they would never, accept me. And, I had prior to that, I had the Poverty Law Center, which was, Julian Bond was president at that time. The Poverty Law Center, I had contacted them, months before, or, maybe almost a year prior to that. And, I don't know if that had anything to do with them at least giving me an opportunity, to interview for that. But it was strictly personal for me.
Okay.
I really I really didn't think of it as being, you know, racist or feminist or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the ad at the time that, you know, that the airline was, you know, was running.
Mm-hmm. And so fast forward, now they've merged, and now they're with Pan Am. And Pan Am, to me, obviously was an international airline. So the exposure and the people that you met should have changed a little bit, because you would be dealing maybe not with a lot of black stewardesses, but you were dealing with different people of color, because at that point it should have been, you know, Europeans and Mexicans and all, you know, because they were flying to Mexico. So at that point, you should have had a better attitude or a better collection of people with better attitudes towards you. Am I right? Did you see a difference when they merged with Pan Am?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But you know, keep in mind, you know, I saw and felt a difference prior to the merger with Pan Am. You know, because by then National had you know, acquired a few more blacks, you know, because it was mandated, you know, for one thing, but they had acquired a few more blacks. And, you know, and I often made a point of introducing myself, you know, you know, to offer any assistance or help or whatever that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. Long before Pan Am merger, there was a big difference.
Exactly.
You know, because they were more black flight attendants, you know, were coming in.
Well, you know, the history, and we're going to get to, I'm going to take a caller because the switchboard is lit up here. Some people want to talk to you. So I'm going to take a caller. And then at that point, I want to, because you've gone from National to Pan Am, and then, of course, Delta bought Pan Am. So you've had a wonderful career with three different airlines. But let's take a caller and see if they want to ask a question, make a comment, or they may just want to continue to listen to your fabulous story. So just a moment, let me see if we can bring in this person to ask a question. Hello, caller. This is Casey Grant, host of the Fly Girl Show. Would you like to make a comment? And we have a little delay, so we always have to give them time. So, caller, would you like to say something, or are you going to continue to listen to the interview? Hello? Okay, I can hear.
Oh, I guess, am I the only one here? Personally know Andra, and I'd just like to continue listening, please.
Oh, then that's perfect. No problem. Thank you so much, and continue, because it's really a fascinating interview. And I'm glad that information, Andra, that you passed it on so that people could listen to this fabulous interview. I'm sure she's heard a lot of your stories. So now we're at Pan Am, and you flew for Pan Am before Delta merged, well, bought, or however, the merger with them. How many years, and you said you saw the difference in the attitude. So that was how many years about that you flew for Pan Am?
Oh, Pan Am was about, I don't know.
Okay.
19, 20 years or so.
Okay, perfect. Okay. And that was traveling all over the country at that point, right? You were flying all over the world.
Oh, yes, yes. I absolutely was seeing, countries that I had only dreamt about. But, Pan Am was, it was a great experience for me.
Absolutely. Okay, and so fast forward, we are now flying for Delta. And Delta, obviously, since they took over the routes of Pan Am, that was another. How did you find Delta to be? Because at that point, Delta was flying internationally. So then you did have a nice mixture of cultures and personalities and people of color. And because Delta started off definitely as people know, if you know anything about Delta, a Southern airline. Did you find the attitudes? Now we've gone into a different year. Now we're, what, now 2005, or I can't really remember when they merged, but what was the difference in flying
well,
with that
well,
third
airline?
Well,
you know, airline? You can't ask me because I'm old.
We all have a problem with trying to remember dates, but that's okay. We're going to ad lib to this. But how did you find flying for your third company?
I don't know. Delta was different.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, by the time I reached Delta, I had come into my own.
You
so,
were seasoned, yes.
Very much seasoned. So I was capable of handling any situation. And I was comfortable with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, I basically never took anything, for granted or I got offended, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I had something to say, I stated that,
mm-hmm.
you know, unlike national. You know, whereas I knew I had to walk very softly,
mm-hmm.
by the time Delta came around, you know, I was very outspoken.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. And a lot of the obstacles had been dealt with, and they were no longer issues that you had overcome, which... As I said, you take my breath away listening to some of your stories, as well as I'm sure I can take your breath away by my stories. And so now we're going to talk about how you were discovered for the wonderful documentary by PBS, the co-producers being Sarah Colt and Helen Dabrowski, and how they... The job, what was your impression of that fabulous Fly With Me? And for those that did not get a chance to see it, please go on YouTube and put in Fly With Me. It's a PBS documentary on the stewardess's story. And it brings in how we fought for equal rights, how women were fighting for their place in society, and how the stewardesses were fighting, and as I always say, for the black flight attendants, because now we are flight attendants and not stewardesses, how we fought for our civil rights in the sky. So can you give us a little history and recap how you felt, and did you learn anything new from this wonderful documentary?
Well, yes, of course. I learned that basically I could have done more, but I was just amazed at how many individuals fought, you know, for that, you know, for the freedom, so to speak, and, you know, just the privacy law itself. You know, I wasn't a part of that. But the fact that someone stood up and fought for that privacy law was amazing to me, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I was witnessing the experience of not having it or having to share a room and, unaware that, you know, that someone was fighting, you know, to give me that freedom.
And it is amazing. I just did an interview. This is like part three of interviewing some of the people that were in the documentary. And I had to start, of course, with Patricia Banks Edmonston, who, because of her, Andra, we were able to get the job. And this started for her in 1956. For those that are listening, if you'd like to go back and listen to the interview with Patricia Banks Edmonston and hearing her story and bringing it up to her comments on that fabulous Fly With Me documentary by PBS. But her story, she's the one that opened the door for the black flight attendants / we were stewardesses back then to get the job, because she took the airlines to court and sued for discrimination. And because of her winning the lawsuit, they were forced. And, of course, Andra, for you and I, affirmative action helped to push that. And for the history of what I like to say, from 56, and Delta didn't hire their first black stewardess until 1966. So we had a struggle. And we really reach out and really commend and give the respect to those that fought the battle for us. And we just carried the baton on and to do and to realize and to make everyone realize that a black flight attendant or stewardess was very well capable of doing the job. And I just think that the PBS special was just outstanding. And you were very impressive, Andra. I really loved your expressions and your point. When you made a point and you pointed that finger, boy, it was just impactful to me because I paid attention, and then they did such a good job of introducing you. And so I think you should be very proud of your contribution to that documentary.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's hard for me to accept compliments, but thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Yes, it was good. And what type of response have you gotten from other flight attendants that have viewed the documentary?
Oh, my stars. I have gotten, I don't know how many comments and texts from individuals that I hadn't spoken to in years. You know, I'm just really shocked at how many, you know, persons saw that, you know, that special. So, yeah, I'm thrilled, you know, I'm actually, you know, happy that some of the things, and you know, that I endured, I'm able to say, because I've never said it, you know. I just kept trying to move forward. But,
well, I'm glad you said that. And so, sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to comment on that statement, because in writing my books, I've written three black aviation history books, but in the interviews and trying to document the different things that happened, it was very therapeutic to me. And I think that this is exactly what you're saying, too. We had suppressed the things that we dealt with because, as I say all the time, my family never knew, and you just addressed the issues and you went and you moved on. And I think that it's something to hear the feedback on when people say, I never knew you went through that. And then you have to say to yourself, wow, I did go through that, and I did handle it, and you held your head high, and you addressed the issues. And we never whined to anybody else about, oh, I don't know. Quitting was never an option. I never was going to leave that job. But I just thought the documentary brought back a lot of emotions to me. I became very emotional after reviewing the different things that we had to go through for weight check. And for the audience, yes, we had to weigh a certain amount, and if you weighed more, you could lose your job. They would give you a trial period or a probationary period to lose the weight. But for me, my personal story was I could only weigh 120. And so therefore, when you gained 1 or 2 pounds, if you had not lost it in a designated time period, you could be dismissed from the company. And so to bring back those days of starving, I took diuretics, I took laxatives, and to go back and realize the pressure that we had to look a certain way, the image that we had to portray for these airlines, it was more pressure than we realized it. We just walked through it and did it. But I just thought the documentary brought back a lot of good history that the average person did not know, was not aware of. And I think you went through that emotional thing too, didn't you?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, because when someone threw a drink in my face, simply because they did not care, you know, to be served by me, or they would demand the person in charge, I mean, I would apologize profusely to them and run back to get, you know, a white flight attendant to, you know, to serve them. You know, I mean, later in years, you know, of course, my attitude changed. You know, I just went in the galley, stood around for a few minutes, went back out and said, hey, that I'm the person in charge. How can I assist you? You know.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But I did not, I didn't have the luxury of sharing it, you know. So I'm not sure of if I had, if where I would be now, you know, because I don't think that. I really don't think that I could have shared any of the experiences without you know, without it, you know, without whining or without it being that I'm so disgusted, you know, with the job. I wasn't.
Yes.
You know, I just wanted I just wanted to be part of the crew.
Exactly.
You know, and,
yeah.
Yeah.
And to have the opportunities that you knew were there and you wanted to enjoy them. And I know for me, it was like, why would I deny myself that? I'm capable. And so therefore, we were never going to allow anyone to take that opportunity away from us.
Yeah, true.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and what are you doing these days then? Because you're now retired. Are you doing anything that still involves aviation? Are you traveling?
No, I'm actually not traveling a lot. I would like to travel more, you know, but, you know, COVID has kind of, you know, put a stop to a lot of the things that I would like to do. But, no, you know, I do require a little more people interaction than what I'm receiving right now. But mm-hmm. I'm just kind of chilling and going to lunch with friends, you know, every month
Enjoying life,
really.
Yes, yes. Well, I appreciate you taking your time on this beautiful Sunday and to have a special show. My shows are usually they're designated to be on Wednesdays at 11, but as I tell my audience all the time, when I find someone interesting or a subject that I think is interesting, I bring it to them, so no matter what day. So with that, Andra, I would like to say thank you so much for being on the show to give us a little history and background on you, those terrible trials and tribulations that you had to endure, and also to recap the fabulous documentary by PBS, Fly With Me, which I said to everyone, please go on YouTube and pull it up and put in Fly With Me. It is a fascinating documentary, well done, by Sarah Colt and Helen Dubrowski. And so with that, I would like to say thank you so much for the interview.
Well, you're more than welcome, Ms. Casey. Yeah. You're more outgoing than I am, so thank you for that.
You are so welcome. And so with that, my audience, I think that we are going to wrap up another fabulous interview. As I said, I just think that it takes courage to be a pioneer. And I think, as Andra has expressed, it wasn't that she was so aware that she was a pioneer. It was a matter of her being determined to do well, because that's what she would do. Her personality would also demand that of herself. But she wanted the job, and she wanted the opportunity, and she wanted to fly all over. So not only did she become that, she also is a pioneer in being one of the first blacks for Pan Am, for National Pan Am, and then at this point ending her career with Delta Airlines. I can't say it enough. I hope that you all will definitely see a little bit more of Andra on the PBS. You'll be able to see her personality and the gesture that I pointed out. I think it just was so impactful when she said, watch me. And so you'll get it when you watch it. You'll go, yep, that was so impactful. And you want to wait for the next scene to see what she did. And it was a delight to see her in the documentary. So with that, I am going to say I hope that you will have a very pleasant day. Please go on my website, which is theflygirl10.com, theflygirl10.com, and see where I am, where my book signings are, or some interesting facts or documentaries even that are coming up. And it's always about telling the history, our black aviation history, which is so important. And with that, I am going to say see you next time. Have a good time. Once again, this is Casey Grant. This is the Fly Girl Show. And I hope to have you tune in once again when I bring you people of interest and topics of interest. Have a great day. Thank you. Goodbye.